What's up, freaks? This was a great rip. Rip 202 of Rabbit Hole Recap. Matt's back in the saddle. I'm about to have a baby. I got to run. I got to go. But an incredible episode nonetheless. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. It was brought to you by our good friends at Unchained Capital. They're right down the hall for me as I speak. If you freaks are looking to eliminate single points of failure in your custody model, you got to do the concierge onboarding. With Unchained Capital, you got to take control of your Bitcoin keys, and because it's a key step to improving your security, but also a big responsibility. Extreme ownership when it comes to Bitcoin. Even with a single hardware wallet, it's easy to worry about coins being lost or stolen. This is why Unchained can help. Unchained offers concierge onboarding, a personalized service to help guide you from a Bitcoin security beginner to a pro. Do you want to go pro? You're going to need Unchained, okay? They're going to have video calls with you. A member of their team will help you set up the multi-sig cold storage, even if you've never held your own keys before. If you're out there, you're a high net worth individual, you're a business that wants to control your own keys, you've never done it before, you're worried, you're thinking, oh, this is a big step doing this. No, not a big step. Unchained is here with their concierge onboarding to hold your hand, to make sure you're as comfortable as possible. They're going to ship you hardware wallets as well. They're going to get you everything that's required. Once you've completed the onboarding, Unchained is going to continue providing you with close guidance and support to help you get comfortable with your new vault setup. If you ever need to improve your Bitcoin security but have been putting it off, concierge onboarding is a simple way to get started with confidence. Okay, book your onboarding today at unchained.com/concierge at checkout. Get $50 off with the promo code TFTC. And then go check out everything else Unchained has to offer at unchained.com. But the concierge service is unchained.com/concierge. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at Brains. Brains. Hope you're running Brains OS Plus firmware right now. Hash price is low. Price is falling. Learning that in the ad read. This is why you got to listen to the ad reads to get alpha. Brains, if you're running Brains OS Plus firmware and you're a miner, you're probably feeling better than those who are not, because Brains OS Plus firmware allows you to stack more sats with your hash. So you're more profitable than people running the same ASIC but not running Brains OS Plus firmware on it. Basically, the firmware finds the high frequency hashing boards, hashing chips on the hashing board, and focuses the electricity on those areas. So you produce more hashes and therefore more sats. It's an auto-tuning firmware. Not only does it do that, it helps with fan control and miner management if you're running a farm. It's an incredible thing. Go to brains.com, BRAIINS.com, and find out if your ASIC is compatible with Brains OS Plus firmware. And if it is, I would download it. If you're not, you're leaving sats on the table. It's as simple as that. The Brains team also has insights.brains.com, which is a one-stop shop for all your mining data needs. Figure out what's going on. And they have a blog. I think the Brains team is going to be here in a couple of weeks. We're going to have some of them come through the stew. A lot brewing at Brains, in those brains, and that witch's brew. Trying to make you more profitable as a miner. Make sure you sign up if you haven't already. This rip was also brought to you by our good friends at HODL HODL. The Baltic Honey Badger Conference is back. BalticHoneyBadger.com, I believe, is the website. Let me triple check. But that's going on September 3rd and 4th in Riga, Latvia. The High Signal Conference is back, baby. It's back. It is BalticHoneyBadger.com. September 3rd and 4th in Riga, Latvia. You're going to have some of the most high signal Bitcoin content condensed into 2 days. It's actually a whole week. There will be events leading up to the conference in Riga and after. So if you want to make a little trip to the Baltic, I highly recommend it. I went in 2018, had an extremely good time, learned a lot. Again, one of the most high signal conferences of the year. I will be there September 3rd, 4th, Riga, Latvia, Bitcoin Honey Badger 2022. The team behind it, HODL HODL, also runs lend.hodlhodl.com, which is a peer-to-peer lending platform. No KYC, no AML. Use your Bitcoin as collateral to get liquidity. They have hodlhodl.com as well, which is a peer-to-peer exchange. No KYC, no AML. go check out everything they have going on for the Baltic Honey Badger, BalticHoneyBadger.com. Hoddle Hoddle, go to HoddleHoddle.com, Lend.HoddleHoddle.com as well. This rip, last but not least, was brought to you by our good friends at Crowd Health, okay? Crowd Health is here to help you eliminate parasitic third parties in the healthcare industry. If you want to take your healthcare into your own hands, you can go to joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC for a special offer for you freaks. Where if you use the code TFTC during sign up, the first thousand of you sign up are going to receive a discounted membership of $99 a month for the first 6 months. Okay. Crowd Health, basically, it is a new model for taking care of your healthcare expenses. You pay a monthly fee into a dedicated bank account that is yours, that you control, that you can walk away with at any point in time. And if you ever have a medical expense, you put your bill up to Crowd Health. There's very good privacy. The other people on the platform aren't going to know who you are. They're just going to know what you need in terms of medical care. You pay the first $500 of any bill. And then after that, the bill goes out to the Crowd Health community and it gets crowdfunded. And the best part about this model is, again, it's going to get you more accurate healthcare pricing. Crowd Health goes and negotiates on your behalf, which the insurance companies were supposed to do, but as many of you know, they're not really good at it. And so Crowd Health is going to be there to help drive down prices for your healthcare. And then the Crowd Health community is going to be there to help you cover your healthcare costs. They've had 100% of their bills, their customer bills, paid by the crowd. There's a special Bitcoin crowd where you're going to pay your monthly fee. A portion of that is going to go in fiat to that bank account, and then they're partnering with the Bitcoin exchange as well, a Bitcoin only exchange, to put some of that monthly payment into Bitcoin as well, to hold in Bitcoin over the course of your engagement with Crowd Health. Okay, so that you can speculative attack your future healthcare costs. It's a beautiful thing. And again, like I said, these monthly payments are going into a dedicated bank account that you own. So it's not just some black box where you pay a monthly fee and you hope that you get covered in the future. At any point, if you decide to leave Crowd Health, you have that bank account that you own. You could take that money with you. You get it back, and the Bitcoin as well. So go to joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC. Again, the first 1,000 members will receive a discounted membership of $99 a month for the first 6 months. It's not hard to sign up either. It's not hard to leave your health insurance plan. You can do it very easily. The Crowd Health team is here to help you do that. You can sign up, book an appointment to speak with the Crowd Health representative. He'll tell you everything you need to know about how their product works. It's a beautiful thing. I'm using it myself. I've decided I don't like the health insurance racket anymore. I've got a family. I'm going to go with Crowd Health. Joincrowdhealth.com/TFTC. Enjoy this rip of RHR. Okay.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
I've got my phone. Freaks, I'm going to have my phone out this episode because the second Ben child could arrive at any moment. And I need to have the phone at the ready in case my wife goes into labor.
It would be a special, I hope for your sake it doesn't happen during the rip, but it would be a special rabbit hole recap moment if it did.
It would be.
Just like drop everything, like your computer, you throw your computer up in the air, car cuts the stream, fucking run.
This may be foreshadowing for something to come later in this rip. Going to be a relatively tight rip this week, freaks. Life is beautiful. Early June here in Austin, Texas. It's hot as hell. It's actually relatively cool today. It's been in the low hundreds.
Relatively cool, like 97.
Yeah. Yeah. Went on a nice walk this morning to try to induce some labor activity. It was nice and refreshing. Nice walk around Lady Bird Lake.
You went on a walk with your wife?
Yes. Apparently, a lot of activity is,
I was gonna say, Marty, going on a walk by yourself, that's not how it works. But
no. There's one thing here about Austin, Carr. I don't know if you can answer this question, but they call it Lady Bird Lake, but it's a river.
I know the answer. I looked into this.
What's the answer? I don't
know. What's the answer, Carr?
I don't know.
Carr doesn't know.
I don't know
the answer. Well, I mean, there's a dam there, so they just call it a lake. They do that all over America, wherever the dams are, they just call them lakes. But do you know why it's called Lady Bird Lake?
Yes, Lyndon B. Johnson's wife.
Do you know
Lady Bird Johnson?
She did like a lot of conservation work around there. Like she cleaned it up and everything.
Yes.
But you know what's kind of fucked up about it?
No.
Well, first of all, you're correct. It's not a lake. That's some propaganda bullshit. But what's fucked up was while she was alive, she refused. They wanted to name it after her. She said no, no, no. And then she died and they named it after her.
Yeah, we have Lady Bird Lake. Shout out to Lyndon B. Johnson's wife. I think people think he's a bad president, if I recall correctly, but she seems to be an incredible woman. They have Lady Bird Flower Sanctuary, too, which is right off of 1 North. That's a great place to go. If you're ever in Austin, you have children. It's a great place to go.
But isn't that fucked up they named it after her when she said she didn't want it to be named after her?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of stories like this too. In Philadelphia, I went to school right down the street from Girard College, which is a private school for black students only. And Girard, who basically donated all the money for the grounds and owned the property, when he died, one thing he had in his will was like, all right, you're going to build a wall around Girard College and it has to be 16 feet high. And the city of Philadelphia was like, all right, we're not going to build a 16-foot wall around this. So what they did was they dug 8 feet in the ground. And they have, so there is technically a 16-foot wall.
It's an 8-foot fucking wall, Marty.
It's 8-foot wall above ground, but there's also 8 feet below it. That's a Philadelphia fact for you.
Well, the more you know.
The more you know.
This is why the freaks tune in every week.
You can beg for things while you're living, but as soon as you die, people will just be like, eh, we're not going to respect that. We'll try our best. How's it feel? A lot of travel this week?
A lot of travel. It's good to be home. But also, it was a really, really great trip. I'm going through, you know, like travel withdrawal. When you're like with a good crew of people for such a long time and then you're without them, you feel a little bit lost. I feel lost, but reinvigorated. I'm ready to fucking go. let's build some cool shit.
Yeah. See, I mean, obviously we had Jack Mallers on last week. You guys were in the thick of the aftermath of the Oslo Freedom Forum event, and it seems like the vibes are very high. And it's good to see you reinvigorated.
Norway's a sneaky, dope country. Sneaky, awesome country.
Beautiful country from the pictures.
Gorgeous country. It's basically a modern day citadel. I mean, the population is 5 million people. It's massive country. They have this sovereign wealth fund. Do you know that the Norwegian sovereign wealth fund, like the people of Norway own 2.5% of all stocks in the world?
Yeah. I didn't know it was 2.5% of all stocks, but I did know the sovereign wealth fund was very well funded.
How crazy is that? Their infrastructure is gorgeous. Like, it's just like all the aesthetics. Like, I was like riding on public transit and I'm like turning to my lady. I'm like, even the public transit has nice aesthetics.
Well, and Norway's gifted us some incredible Bitcoiner. Shout out to Chris Ben Dixon.
I met so many. I met so many like quiet behind the scenes Norwegian Bitcoiners. They have a really, really strong crew over there.
Yeah. Obviously, we have CT.
Most Americans might easily forget that we still have some of the strictest border regs post-COVID out of any country. If you're not American, you can't come here without showing a vax passport. But even if you're an American citizen, you have to get like a negative test to come back into the States, regardless of vaccine status. So I was like, I mean, I have a lot of shit to do over the next 2 weeks or whatever. So like, I wasn't really worried about getting COVID. I was worried about getting a positive result on the test. And I was like, well, you know, worst comes to worst, I'll just activate the Norwegian Bitcoiners and like just go out and go out and chill on their ranches. And there's a bunch of Norwegian Bitcoiners that have like large amounts of land out there, and I was just going to go chill with them. it's so empowering that we have. The point of my story is it's just so empowering that we have like this family around the world. Like, no matter where you are, you're not alone. Pretty fucking cool.
It's the power of Bitcoin, baby. It unites. You have this network that's beating, and you meet Bitcoiners no matter where you are, and you already have this common thing, this thing in common.
I flew back through Heathrow, you know, like 6 days after the Oslo Freedom Forum. Didn't expect to see any Bitcoiners. I ran into a ride or die freak named Casey from London at my gate. So shout out to Casey. That was pretty cool.
Hey, freaks are everywhere. They're everywhere, man. We're a global podcast. Only 56% of our audience is in the US.
Also, don't connect through Heathrow if you have a choice. That was a mistake. I'm never going to do that again.
Why was that a mistake?
I don't know. It's just a pain in the ass of an airport. Yeah. And they're not in the Eurozone anymore. So it was like I had to cross two borders to make sense. I shouldn't have done that.
You get how many stamps did you get on this trip? Two.
Like three? I got three stamps. Three stamp trip.
I need to get more stamps in my passport.
You
want
to hear? So I was supposed to travel to Italy in 2019, like right before all the COVID nonsense happened, like fall of 2019. And a week before I was supposed to leave, my dog opened one of our drawers. She like pulled open a drawer, took out my passport, and ripped it to shreds. She straight up like targeted my passport. So I went to like the passport office to get an expedited passport. And the woman said to me, she's like, you can get the normal size passport or you can get a bigger size passport if you expect to travel a lot. And I got the bigger size passport, and I'm pretty sure I jinxed all the border restrictions because it was like, it's like 3 months before international borders closed. So it's important to me to try and fill it up with stamps to make it worth it. Paid the upcharge fee for the larger passport.
Hey, we need to end this border restriction madness. I think the UK just ended all their COVID restrictions at the border. They lifted up in the last couple of weeks.
Norway had nothing. Norway didn't exist.
Shout out to Norway. Let's get on the Bitcoin. We've got a tight hour and 15 minutes left here. You got to leave at 4. I should probably get back to my wife, who's been having early labor contractions. The price of Bitcoin currently is 30,215 cuckbucks. One cuckbuck is going to get you 3,310 sats. We are sitting at block height 739,023. We are 849 blocks away from the next difficulty adjusted, which is currently estimated to be on June 8th, 2022, which would be next Wednesday. And it looks like as of right now, we will have another downward difficulty adjustment of 1.1%. That would be two in a row. Blocks are coming in at 10 minutes and 6 seconds on average. There are 18,517 transactions in Clark's mempool, and there are 4,758.85 Bitcoin in unspent capacity in Samurai's Whirlpool, or 143.7 million cuckbucks worth of unspent value there. That's an all-time high, I believe.
It feels like it just keeps hitting all-time highs, at least in Bitcoin terms.
On RHR, it's an all-time high. We've got a light list today. Heavy macro talk on the back end.
Yeah, I mean, I always forget. I mean, but this is episode 202. We've done 202 weeks in a row of Rabbit Hole Recap. I always forget until it hits that like the summer months are always quieter in Bitcoin land.
Everybody's on vacation. Yeah. I feel here in Austin, I feel like people leave Austin in the summer to get away from the heat.
I mean, it makes sense. It does get quite hot.
I think I'm getting used to the heat, though. I don't mind the 100-degree weather.
Wearing long pants in fucking 100-degree weather.
Hey, the white pants are a big meme here on RHR these days, so got to give the freaks what they want. Speaking of giving people what they want, Russia is demanding particular currencies for their goods these days, the ruble being the most popular. We've got some, we can actually tie that subject into this one, but apparently Russia is mulling over whether or not it will allow cryptocurrency to be used for international payments. Interfax news agency quoted a government official saying last Friday, the idea of using digital currencies and transactions for international settlements is being actively discussed. Ivan Chebyshev, head of the finance ministry's financial policy department, was quoted as saying. So as the conflict or the war between Russia and Ukraine wages on, there's a lot of posturing going on between the international community and Russia specifically, as we've mentioned many times throughout the last few months as this war is waged on. Russia has a bit of leverage in this situation because they control a lot of the fuel sources, particularly natural gas and oil, that Europe is heavily dependent on, particularly that natural gas. They also have a bunch of food as well, particularly wheat. And as this war wages on and the West postures from week to week, Russia seems to be really digging their feet into the ground and saying, hey, we're going to play hardball. You're going to have to pay for our natural gas in rubles. You're going to have to set up a bank account with Gazprom Bank and basically convert your local currency to rubles there. Or basically, and Nassel Haji was on the show a few weeks ago, and I think if you haven't listened to that episode, go listen to it if you want to understand the mechanics of how this pay in rubles is actually going down. So you set up, these countries set up a bank account at Gazprom Bank. They deposit money in their local currency in one account, and then there's another account on the other side of Gazprom Bank that provides a commensurate amount of rubles and then pays Russia that way. So they're technically not paying in rubles, they're paying in their native currencies. And then Gazprom is just sending rubles to Russia on the back end.
They're like market selling them for rubles.
Yes. So
it reminds me of like the shitcoin schemes, you know, just it props up the price of rubles.
Yeah.
Creates this constant demand.
Well, it's a very interesting retrospective that we have here just 6 months into this conflict. Obviously, right out the gate, the United States and other UN nations decided to put heavy sanctions on the Russian economy in an attempt to destroy the ruble. The ruble had relative weakness for the first few weeks, but since then it's been strengthening and is sitting at its strongest point against the US dollar in many, many years. So well,
it's super interesting, right? Because usually, like when these central banks try and prop up like a failing currency, they basically sell their own hard assets for their currency, right? They do like these open market operations. Usually it'll be gold, right? So you sell gold and then you buy your currency to try and prop it up. Kind of like what Duquan tried to do with Terra, but like you sell gold and then you buy the currency you're trying to prop up. In this case, because he has these energy resources that is essentially his enemy's demand, they need these resources. He basically got his enemies in a situation where they're doing sanctions on him, but they're also propping up his currency, and then he doesn't have to sell any of the central bank's assets.
Yeah.
It's pretty smart.
I mean, yeah, we're talking like...
You're very clever.
We're talking from a strategic point of view here. Again, like we've been saying for many months, Russia has a lot of leverage in this particular conflict because of the terrible energy policies that have been proliferating throughout Europe for the last two decades. Like they need Russian gas and oil, and Russia has all the leverage. And so that's something that's we have on the list as well that's been developing over the last couple of weeks, particularly is it seems like Western nations, particularly in Europe, are doubling down on their tough position against Russia. I believe Ursula von der Leyen, who is the president of the EU Commission, came out last week and said that the European Union is going to stop all imports of Russian oil beginning in July, or at least 75%. They'll cut imports by 75%. And again, I think that's going to backfire. You already have energy crisis and a food crisis beginning to rear its head throughout the world, not only in Europe, but particularly in Europe. And I do not think this move is going to really prevent Russia from continuing to do what it has done. And I think it's only going to serve to hurt the European people at the end of the day. Again, not trying to make a judgment call on the war at all, just looking at the reactions from these policymakers to this particular situation. And I, similar to how the original sanctions have backfired, I think this is only going to backfire as well. In Davos last week, George Soros, if you listen to the Sunday episode of No Agenda this week, Adam Carey dug up some of George Soros's speech at Davos at the Soros dinner that he held there during the World Economic Forum event. And he seems to be under the impression that these sanctions are going to work, particularly against natural gas, because at some point in July, if Russia isn't delivering the natural gas to Europe, the capacity for reserves is going to hit its limit, and they're going to have to shut down production of natural gas. And he thinks, George Soros seems to think, that Russia having to shut down the production of the natural gas facilities is actually going to hurt them in the long term, because turning those back on in the future, when they're able to move the gas, the facilities are going to have something like 50% efficiency compared to where it is right now. But I would argue that there's other things that Russia could do with that gas, mainly flare it. If capacity reaches its limits, they could just flare a ton of that gas and
keep. They can mine Bitcoin.
They can mine Bitcoin as well. Obviously, with these sanctions, it has affected Westerners who have ASICs being hosted in Russia. I mean, who is to say
that those are Putin's ASICs now?
Yeah, but with that being said, I mean, we should steel man that argument to spin up mining infrastructure at these natural gas gathering facilities and make it so that you could actually mine Bitcoin with that
scale,
gas.
It's like, it's pretty unlikely at scale.
Yeah, it's very unlikely at scale, but I think they could flare the gas, but no, I mean.
But I mean, like, first of all, George Soros can go fuck himself.
He's 98, dude.
Just to be clear. Yeah, he's like the temperature of Austin right now. I will say that, you know, obviously the sanctions aren't effective because they're not sanctioning the, you know, their number one export because they need it. So, it should be interesting to see how everything unfolds if they're actually going to follow through with sanctioning energy exports from Russia. But up until this point, it's pretty much been a half-assed sanction effort.
Yeah.
It's like one foot in the door, one foot out, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's more of a virtue signal than... this oil import sanction seems like it's going to be material. And again, though,
What I'm saying, right? Like, if you're not going to sanction that, then like your sanctions obviously have no teeth.
Yeah. But again, maybe it does hurt Russia in the sense that they can't sell that oil, or maybe they just ship it somewhere else. I saw something.
But that's what's cool about mining, right? That's why I brought up mining. Yeah. Even though they're not going to do that at scale, realistically speaking, but that gives every energy rich country basically a free market to sell their energy without having to rely on international trade.
Yeah.
Going forward, at least, you know, if we look into like 10, 20 years in the future.
Yeah. No, and I also saw something where there's a scheme going on where, yes, they may be sanctioning the oil and the natural gas, but I saw something this week that India is just playing middleman, where they're buying the Russian oil and gas at a discount and then selling it back to Europe at a premium, just like arbing the difference India. There. So at the end
of
the
day, there's a lot of bullshit to go around, right?
Yeah. So that's happening. This is all happening. Russia is thinking about accepting Bitcoin for payments. We'll see if that happens. I'll put a probability on that, relatively low. But yeah, no, it would be interesting to see how the international community reacts, particularly to Bitcoin, if that does happen.
I mean, they intentionally, their wording was settled, right? International settlements. So I feel like it does kind of open up some wiggle room where they like, you know, kind of like strike on a geopolitical scale, right? Where it's like the payment goes through in Bitcoin, but then it immediately gets converted to rubles or something else.
Yeah.
But the actual payment rails is Bitcoin.
Yeah, but what is that? Like, if you're going to sanction, like, who's going to pay in Bitcoin? Like, why? Why would somebody need to pay in Bitcoin if they're already sanctioned? Like,
well, I mean, Bitcoin's useful in situations where trust is hard to find.
Right? Yes.
So instead of like, instead of depositing euros into Gazprom and having Gazprom convert them into rubles, you convert the euros into Bitcoin, and then on the opposite side of the transaction, Bitcoin to rubles, and then you don't have that trusted third party in the middle doing the conversion.
Exactly. You have higher settlement assurances. Very good point, Matthew.
Yeah.
That's that's why you would use it. So we shall see. It will be interesting to see again how the international community reacts, particularly to Bitcoin, if that does happen. Are they going to say, hey, look, it's facilitating Russia's war against Ukraine. We should shut this down or highly regulate it. Who knows? That it'll definitely throw an interesting variable in the mix if that does come to fruition. And as Matt just said, the higher settlement assurances that come with the Bitcoin network, the likelihood just increased in my head as we were talking here. So be on the lookout for that. Should we stay macro first? Because we have...
Yeah, let's stay macro. I mean, the list is really short on the Bitcoin side.
Yeah, we can actually have a good flow here, I'm thinking now. Macro news, moving on. Janet Yellen was rolled out in front of the press yesterday, and it seems like she is the sacrificial lamb that the Biden administration is putting a lot of responsibility on. She came out and essentially apologized for claiming that she believes that the inflation that began toward the end of last summer would be transitory. She came out in front of the press yesterday and said, hey, there are some unforeseen consequences that have led to inflation being more elevated than we expected. It's obviously not transitory. There are some economic shocks that we could not foresee. And it's just interesting that this is the narrative that they're running with, because I mean, this is why writing the bent as often as I do is great, because you have receipts. You can go back April 7th, 2020, when the global economy shut down and the Fed and every central bank in the world started printing money like their life depended on it. I wrote a bent that basically said, hey, this is going to lead to high inflation because you're printing money and shutting down supply chains. And even though Janet Yellen was alluding to the war between Russia and Ukraine as the unforeseen economic shock to the system, we all know that inflation was running really high before anybody had any idea that Russia was going to invade Ukraine, and the money printing coupled with the supply chain issues that were started by the economic lockdowns were very obviously going to lead to this elevated inflation. So they are admitting that transitory was a bad meme and message to be getting out there in the markets. But again, they're not taking full responsibility and full culpability. They're trying to pawn
it's a
this.
Cop out.
Yeah, they're copping using Russia, Ukraine as a cop out.
You did say that Yellen's the scapegoat. I mean, she should take the majority of responsibility. She's a fucking Treasury Secretary.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's not the only person to blame. I mean, she should have listened to our boy Bitcoin sign guy when he was behind her with the sign, but that's a different story.
Yeah, but again, like let's be centrist here. She inherited the Treasury Secretary position from Steve Munchin Butts, who was Treasury Secretary when he started all this monetary base expansion and helicopter money in people's bank accounts. So yeah, you'd think. So this is actually a very high signal that proves that the system's inherently corrupt and fucked beyond belief, because you have to have this consistent narrative, even across like the Trump administration and the Biden administration at the Treasury Secretary level. I mean, Mnuchin was the one that okayed all the helicopter money and the expansionary policies that Trump had when we went into lockdowns in 2020. Biden and Yellen come in and they continue doing that. People want to say,
yeah, oh, I mean, they agree on like 99% of all the bullshit that fucks us. Yeah. They just disagree on like that last 1%.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a bipartisan fuck up. The money is broken. Until any of these Treasury secretaries or central bankers admit that the money is fundamentally broken, you're really not going to fix any of these problems. You're not going to be able to print your way out of this. You're not going to be able to raise interest rates to tame inflation. So that's, again, Jerome Powell was Fed chairman under Trump and now Biden. So he's one of the mainstays of these two administrations, and he finds himself in a very hard place where they're raising rates right now. Looks like we're definitely going to go into a recession. A recent jobs report that came out was pretty terrible. And he's going to have to begin reducing rates and printing more money as supply chains become increasingly constrained with what Europe's doing with their sanctions on Russian oil. And so you're going to have inflation still running hot, and they're going to have to begin printing more money, which should exacerbate that problem.
I'm surprised we haven't gotten some kind of UBI yet. Like I kind of assumed that at this point by now we'd have, you know, like every 2 weeks people just get USD airdropped into their Cash App accounts.
Well, it's beginning to...
Right? Didn't you think by now that we'd... Like, we only had those, like, what? Those, like, two checks that went out during...
Yeah, the during
Trump administration, right? Like, yeah. Right in the beginning.
Yeah. And the... But you're seeing...
If you asked me back then, I would have been like, we're going to get them all the time.
Well, you're seeing they're beginning to play some cards... that are on the table that they can play before they go to overt UBI. Like, there's a lot of talk about canceling, what is it, $10,000 or $15,000 of student debt for everybody.
Yeah, I might go back to school.
But yeah, I mean, that could be seen as a form of UBI. You cut off people, you take $10,000 off of people's student loans, reduce their monthly payments.
Limit?
I don't think so.
To take out a student loans? Can you just take out student loans at any moment?
I think you have to like actually be accepted into a school and have that proof.
So there's some kind of verification?
Yeah.
I think the freaks can't just all go out and take student loans right now
I think you need an acceptance letter to do that.
Sorry, brainstorming on air.
Yeah, so, I mean, they're making that move or they're posturing that they're going to. So that could be seen as a form of UBI one way or the other, reducing monthly loan payments to give people more disposable income. But yeah, I think UBI will come at some point, especially if inflation continues to run hot. And yeah, I mean, again, that's what I said in April of 2020. It's not the exact same situation, but we're doing essentially what the Weimar Republic did in the 1920s when they shut down their economy and just printed a bunch of money and gave it to people. So... be aware, freaks, be aware. This is going to probably be a big theme as we move throughout the summer. Again, we mentioned it a few weeks ago. We had Q1 GDP numbers come in negative at the end of April. And so Q2 will end here June 30th, and then we'll get official numbers towards the end of July. And so that's when it will probably be obvious that we're in a recession, at which point a lot of people will be looking at Jerome Powell and the Fed to make a move in one direction or the other, or to stay flat. So yeah, apparently quantitative tightening is beginning as well this week. So a lot of people are looking at that as something that could also exacerbate the problem that equities markets have been facing if they begin tightening, which means they're unwinding their balance sheet. And constricting the monetary base more quickly than they have been already. That could throw more fuel on the fire of the negative connotations in the market. So yeah, it's a very interesting time. We had Jamie Dimon come out yesterday morning. He sort of backtracked only a couple of weeks ago. He was saying he's not really worried about the economy. Yeah, like, but yesterday morning it came out and said, brace yourselves, there's an economic hurricane on the horizon.
I fucking love the term economic hurricane. Cheers to him on that one.
Right.
I'm going to use that one.
So he came out and said that yesterday, completely pivoting from the posture that he had only a couple of weeks ago. And then you had Goldman Sachs, the president of Goldman Sachs came out, I believe this morning, and he sort of made fun of Jamie Dimon. He said, I'm not going to use a weather-related term, but the situation in the macroeconomic landscape is unlike anything he's ever seen in his lifetime. And there are going to be some consequences, some negative consequences in the markets as these supply chains become severely strained and inflation's running hot. So you have...
Well, we could agree on that.
Yeah. You have the bankers coming out and they're beginning to sound the alarm bells. So that should be spooking. I haven't checked equities markets today, but that should be spooking them. Let me check right now.
Just imagine if you watch CNBC for the last 2 weeks, 3 weeks, it's just been pure economic hurricane mode.
Yeah. Well, this is funny. Like, you have Jamie Dimon come out and say this. You have president of Goldman Sachs come out with these comments as well. And then markets are up today because it's the way the clown world works. You have...
you know what it could be? In my classic cynical sense self, it's like, scare retail now, and then they stop tightening and they start printing money again, and everything pumps.
Well, yeah. So that's what, if markets are up, Dow Jones is up 1.33% right now, S&P up 1.84%, NASDAQ up 2.7%. You have Jamie Dimon, the president of Goldman Sachs, come out with these comments, and they have a lot of pull in terms of central bankers taking heed of what they're saying. And so markets are probably saying, hey, if Jamie Dimon's coming out and say this, Goldman Sachs is coming out and saying this as well, you can probably bet that's a signal to Jerome Powell to begin reversing course. And so markets are probably trying to price that in right now, which is weird. It's just a clown world. It's all projection.
Yeah, I mean, this is all just bullshit, really.
Yeah.
Stamble stack sets.
And then, so this is another, so Nunya Business at Platizow on Twitter. This is a very interesting chart. It didn't get a lot of play. I retweeted it right before we came on air, but this is a fascinating chart, which looks at the 6 month rate of change of the Fed funds rate, going all the way back to 1955. And so this basically looks, so obviously we've had consecutive rate hikes coming off of like the zero bound of the federal funds rate, X-axis, and the rate of change is 862.5% over the last 6 months on the federal funds rate. And historically, if you're listening at home, you can't see the chart we have on the screen right now, but historically, the largest rate of change before the last 6 months was around 200%. And so we're more than 4.5x that rate of change. And this is just the nature of interest rates being so low that if you're going to increase them at all, that rate of change is going to be higher than in years past when they were relatively elevated. So I think this chart, highlights just how insane the financial system is right now, particularly the monetary system. And that's the question Nunya posed in his tweet, is like, will this break something? Just looking at the pure rate of change of the federal funds rate, it's pretty significant.
Well, I mean, I know like the housing market, which I've been watching pretty closely because I want fucking land. There's panic on the streets.
Yeah. What are you seeing?
Sellers are panicking. People are rushing to put their shit on the market. And people that are trying to sell right now are just, there's a lot less action because people don't think they can get mortgages. Because banks are, following course and raising their rates.
Yeah.
So I'm just, watching, hoping to see a little opportunity here, and hopefully Bitcoin doesn't nuke too much in the process, and then we outlast that, because as Bitcoiners, we are in a unique situation where we're holding this asset that is most other home purchasers aren't holding.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and the Bitcoin price action's been pretty volatile. I mean, it went down to like 28, then went up to 32. Now it's hovering around 30.
You want a good anecdotal bottom signal?
Yes, I do.
Just to put a little bullish tendencies in everyone's minds. So I was gone for 10 days and I had a ride or die Bitcoiner watch our dogs. Great dude. Really appreciate him. And I told him I'd pay him in USD or sats, and he requested USD.
You'll regret that. That's a good bottom signal. What other bottom signals do we have? I don't know if I have any anecdotal bottom signals from the last week. A lot of, I mean, we say this ad nauseum, but in the bear markets, it's when a lot of like the fundamental bullishness gets driven back into me. Obviously, we had the Oslo Freedom Forum last week. I don't know if we talked about, we didn't talk about this since.
We're all in it for the tech now.
Yeah, well, that
we're
was
in
one
it,
thing
in it for the freedom.
One thing we would have talked about last week if it wasn't a special episode, since you were in Oslo, we had Jack on, we were just recapping that event particularly, was the integration that Stripe has with Open Nodes available to its customer. Did you read into that?
Oh, we forgot to mention that.
Yeah, it's pretty big, isn't it?
Are they using Strike or are they using
Stripe? So Stripe,
yeah,
the traditional,
Stripe.
Like the biggest payment processor for
like
companies
on the web. It's like a reverse Bitcoin payment processor. So your customers can pay with credit card and you receive Bitcoin.
Yes.
Which is cool. I've been wanting that for a while. I mean, because there's a lot of Bitcoin only businesses, people that want to receive Bitcoin, that feel compelled to accept credit cards because they don't want to cut out a subset of the market that prefers, the overwhelming majority of the market that prefers paying with credit cards.
Yeah.
So this gives them that option. I think they're testing it right now, right? It's not fully launched.
No, I think it's launched. So like Stripe, I guess, launched an apps product, which allows you to integrate different apps with your Stripe payment processor, and OpenNode is one of those apps. And so you can integrate OpenNode if you're like, so for Ghost, we use Stripe for that to accept US dollar payments. And so if we wanted to, we probably will integrate OpenNode to automatically convert a proportion of the US dollars coming through our Stripe account to Bitcoin. We could do that. Which again, I think this is a very interesting, we talk a lot about merchant adoption and getting more people to pay in Bitcoin, but I think this is, obviously Stripe's the biggest payment processor on the web these days, I believe. And so if you can automatically open up the spigots for any of the e-com sites or people running businesses on the internet that want to automatically convert a portion of their US dollar revenue into Bitcoin, that's just been made significantly easier with this integration. So
I mean, you can remain Bitcoin only while accepting credit cards from your customers.
That as well. Yeah.
To put it succinctly, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely a nice tool to have. I will say though that people will figure out a way to pay with Bitcoin if you force them to pay with Bitcoin. Like I feel like Noddle is like a good example. Like Noddle's never accepted fiat. So if you want a Noddle Dojo, I got a Noddle Dojo right here. If you want a Noddle Dojo, you have to figure out how to get Bitcoin and spend the Bitcoin. Beefsteaks? I mean, obviously that's a Bitcoin clientele, right? But there's a lot of people that go to Bitcoin Beefsteaks that the only time they spend Bitcoin is to go to the beefsteak, and that's because Josh will not accept anything else.
Yeah.
He's like, you either pay Bitcoin or you don't come.
I agree with that. But I think this...
It's a good stopgap. I agree.
Yeah. So this is Stripe, obviously, is mainly focused on commerce on the internet. Imagine when Block Inc. via Square and their point of sale systems turns that on for their meat space clientele. Like my dad, he just opened up another coffee shop down the shore and they're using Square as their payment processor. And he's like, yo, when are they going to turn on the ability for me to automatically convert a portion of this revenue into Bitcoin? just you have people.
You can still kind of do it, but it'd be nice if it was cleaner, right? Yeah. Like you can still have it like direct deposit somewhere that then automatically converts it.
Yeah.
But it's nice to just cut the step.
Yeah. So this is, I think this is.
I guess there's just two things though. Like there's two elements here, right? That I was trying to get at, I guess, which is one, like great to see this as a tool. I think it could be very useful, especially if it's more open for global people. Because it's really hard for people in other countries. There's a lot of countries where it's very difficult to accept credit cards online. So if it opens it up for them, that's fucking huge. But then also on the other side, I would say I would love to see more Bitcoin businesses truly going Bitcoin only and only accepting Bitcoin. I think it takes a couple companies to big companies to really start that flow. But I think ultimately, that's the direction we're going, where if you want this good or service, like you have to pay in Bitcoin.
Yeah, I agree. Let's do it all. Let's funnel as much of the fiat system into Bitcoin as possible. Yeah, you see, like,
people will find a way to pay in Bitcoin.
I agree there, but I don't know. I mean, many people will. I like the Stripe open node integration, things like that, because I'd rather, as a business owner, just be like, all right, if you aren't into Bitcoin yet and you still want this product or service, paying cuck bucks, automatically convert it to Bitcoin. You don't even have to know that we're doing it. As a business owner, that opens up the total addressable customer base that can buy your product or service. But again, I do also see the value in like forcing people to pay in Bitcoin to get them more acclimated with it and to really drive home that this is a money that is in demand by reputable businesses. So,
I mean, forcing people to pay in Bitcoin is essentially doing what Putin's doing with oil.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you hear this laughing? There's popping. There's just something going on in Justin Moon's office right now. It's popping over there laughing.
He's having a good time.
I wish they would respect the on-air sign, but apparently.
What is his office right behind? It's right like behind. He's using the private office there.
Yeah, there is four desks in there. He's got one of them. He set up his monitors. He's
nice.
It's a nice little area. He doesn't turn the lights on in there. It's really, really creepy. He just works in the dark, looking at the blue screens, working on some very interesting tech. All right, we don't have any shout outs this week. Again, late summer. Summer doldrums are here, I guess.
You can't pay for shout outs in credit card.
No, you can't. No, you cannot.
If you ever enabled credit card payments for shout outs, I would, RHR would be dead. I would end the show. let the record show.
C-Tool version 1.0.7 has been released. This is our only software update of the week.
We have two kind of.
I mean, RoboSats is, we'll get to that as well. But
kind of software.
C-Tool, they added BIP86 Taproot address generation, so you can now create Taproot addresses using C-Tool. Bitcoin Q&A released this 2 days ago, so if you're running...
And Super Fat Arrow.
And Super Fat Arrow is right.
With a PH.
I haven't been good at checking my phone to make sure my wife isn't texting me. We're good.
I feel like also I just want to add that like it's important whenever Stripe comes up that Stripe can also go fuck themselves.
They're apparently integrating Lightning.
They've been ride or die shit corners for a long time. And
yeah, I mean, people forget they took a bunch of money from Stellar, didn't they?
They were Stellar, right? Like they were
Jed McCaleb's fourth scam, fourth or third. It was Mt. Gox.
They
were
the main partner. They had a huge amount of the ICO.
Yeah, it was Mt. Gox, Ripple, and then Jed McCaleb went to Stellar. I don't know what he's doing.
I keep saying like too much. Every bear market, we get more Bitcoiners as people get burned from shitcoins. But there is also always a contingent of companies and people who. You know, kind of
pander.
Bend the knee
they pander
because they just get publicly humiliated. And then as soon as as soon as shitcoins start pumping again, they go back to their old ways.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one thing. Anybody at Ghost, if you're listening to this, like we're building a BTC Pay server integration, hoping to be able to roll that out like in Ghost's official app store at some point this summer. But like you go, if you're like, I don't know if you've noticed this when you've been doing this at standard, but you go and you like you can like insert blocks, and like one of the options that they have is NFTs. Like if you want to insert an NFT.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah. It's like, how do you have NFTs before Bitcoin payments, Ghost?
I'll make sure that the next SAT standard we include an NFT block.
I have some rare Pepes we can throw into there.
I forgot. You were a pretty outspoken shitcoiner for a little bit there.
Hey, they were gifted to me. They just sit on the open dime. I actually don't know how to get them off the open dime, so probably can't even use them.
Force hodling.
RoboSats integrates
this open is awesome.
PGP encrypted chat. We haven't talked about RoboSats on the show, have we yet?
Yes, we have.
It's a P2P exchange.
It's really cool. Lightning only. Yeah. P2P, no KYC.
I don't think we've talked about it.
Buy, sell Bitcoin. So they added a built-in encrypted chat that is based on the open PGP standard. All the encryption happens client-side in your own browser locally, so they have no access to it. And you can verify all the math. They make it easy for you to verify it yourself. But what's really cool here is, like, obviously when you're doing a transaction with someone and you're having this chat, you want it to be encrypted. You don't want RoboSats, who's ever running it. It's a NIM that's running it, which is pretty cool, by the way. I think it'd be awesome to see more Bitcoin businesses and Bitcoin projects run by NIMs. And it's Tor only, so you can't access it through ClearNet. So it's a Tor website only to protect their privacy and your privacy. What's really cool about this is because it uses PGP, all the messages are signed with the user's PGP key as well. So if there's a dispute, if the buyer or the seller is trying to scam the other person, when it goes to the dispute mechanism, there's no like he said, she said screenshots that can be photoshopped. Every single message is signed and verified. So you can... who's ever doing the dispute or either of the parties can verify that that message actually was sent, when it was sent and who it was sent by.
Yeah. By cross-referencing it with the PGP key. And so the way I understand it, the RoboSats design is similar to PayNims, where you get a very specific.
Well, they
avatar.
Use the same robot things,
yeah.
But it's a public key, private key pair, similar to Bitcoin addresses, right? So the public key is known. RoboSat server knows your public key. Your trade partners know your public key. They put a cool little name with it and a little robot picture. But you as the user are the only one who controls the private key, initiate transactions and sign messages.
It seems like a very legit product. Again, like you said, the fact that it's run by NIM, this is the right way to create a robust privacy-focused business on top of Bitcoin. I think
pretty fun, cool.
Yeah, do it with NIMs. And it seems like it works. I've heard a lot of people have used it.
Yeah, there's been some pain points, growing pains. You know, it's still relatively new. Don't, get comfortable with it with small amounts.
Yeah.
So but yeah, it works.
Want to go check it out, go open up a Tor browser and go to robosats.com there. You can use a readable address to get there.
Yeah, I think they have a redirect.
Yeah. What else do we got here? This was really cool. Wrote about this earlier this week. Block Inc. Mentioned them earlier. They
How long do you think it's going to take before we can just mention Block and not be... I see you added ink to the end, which I think helps, but not be, Square, Block, Square.
I think we're getting there. We're certainly
it's
improving.
It's still a little bit confusing. I put in the list, I did new Block report.
Yeah.
And that's just confusing, right?
I think of the Block crypto.
or just a Bitcoin block.
Yeah.
It's a report about a Bitcoin block. It's a little bit confusing.
Yeah. So this is a research report from Block Inc., which is the parent company of Square, Tidal, Cash App, TBDEX. They partnered with a research firm.
This is a pretty cool report.
Wakefield Research. So the Block Bitcoin survey was conducted by Wakefield Research among more than 9,500 nationally representative adults age 18 plus in three regions. There were 2,375 people in the Americas, 4,360 in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, and 2,860 individuals in the Asian Pacific region of the world. And they're including an oversample to ensure 100 Bitcoin owners per region. They conducted this between January 10th and January 28th of 2022 using email invitation and online survey. And so again, they had over 9,500 people, and the data coming out of this report is very fascinating. Dives into how people perceive Bitcoin, how people are using Bitcoin, and why people are not adopting Bitcoin if they are not. And so a lot of really powerful information coming from this. First sort of tidbit of information that was gleaned from this is that people in more developed nations that have more stable financial and monetary systems view Bitcoin predominantly as an investment vehicle, as a store of value, while those in lower income regions and developing economies view Bitcoin for pure utility reasons, mainly using the P2P network to send and settle transactions, as opposed to just using the token, the asset, as a store value vehicle. So you have this dichotomy of the Western world, the developed world, seeing Bitcoin as a store of value, and the developing world seeing it as a very useful payments mechanism.
They also have that dope chart that shows how people feel in different countries towards Bitcoin.
Yes. So that's,
keep scrolling, Car. It's a bar chart.
That's page 12.
I will also say, and this is not surprising because Block is always really good with their designs and stuff, the charts are very pretty.
Yes. I tweeted that out. This is a very aesthetically pleasing report.
Yeah, you would think it was Norwegian.
And so, yeah, the particular page that Matt is alluding to is Bitcoin's outlook by country. And they basically asked people, how do you view Bitcoin? Are you optimistic, skeptical, or neither? And so from left to right, Nigeria, India, Vietnam, Argentina, in South Africa, all the respondents from those particular countries had over a 50% rate of optimism for Bitcoin's future.
And then for comparison, the U.S. was 29%.
Yes. So again, you see this dichotomy of developing nations with poor monetary and payment systems seeing a lot of hope in Bitcoin because they see the natural utility that it provides them. And here in the Western world, where we're particularly privileged with our monetary and payment systems, people are not as optimistic because they don't see the need, because we're relatively
comfortable. They need to check their financial privilege. That's why.
Yeah. It was interesting to see Japan, the most skeptical. Japan was the most skeptical.
Is that 11%? I can't read it. Japan's at 11% optimistic?
Yeah.
Basically, it's just Wiz. Wiz is the only person that's optimistic in the whole country.
Japan is the worst scoring on all charts.
It's like Wiz and his 10 buddies.
Which is interesting, because do you think that's Mt. Gox related? Do you think...
It's probably Gox related. It's probably Karpolis related in general.
Yeah, so...
They also have... I don't know. They have they have an aging population, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have a very... advanced, like, fintech fiat rails over there.
Yeah. Yeah, but Japan was one of the first countries to make Bitcoin legal tender. People don't really bring that up. Bitcoin was designated as legal tender in Japan, I believe, in like 2015, 16 or 17.
Really?
Yeah. That was a...
But in what way?
Japan, Bitcoin.
I feel... It feels like legal... The word legal tender... The two words, legal tender, are used very loosely to mean a bunch of different things.
Yes, cryptocurrencies are legal. Wiz says
it's cultural issues and language barrier and aging problem all compounded together. Mm-hmm. That's a really long-winded answer, Wiz, of saying that you're not doing enough over there to to build support for Bitcoin.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but imagine, yeah. So for those of you who are unaware, Mt. Gox was based in Japan. Obviously, that was an epic blow up of a Bitcoin exchange, I believe. The final tally of the amount of Bitcoin lost in Mt. Gox was something like between 700 and 800,000.
Yeah, see what Wiz just said? Bitcoin is not and has never been legal tender in Japan.
I'm sorry, Wiz. What was it? Because I remember maybe it was made. Maybe it was just like legal payments then.
Half the time when you see a story that's like Bitcoin legalized in blah, blah country, it just means they're enforcing stronger KYC rules. Is it like 90% of the time Bitcoin legalized in this country or whatever? It just means draconian uniform KYC rules.
Back to the Blocks report. There was some other really interesting information at this surface. So like in Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, there's significantly more women that consider themselves experts among their friends and family compared to men. In the EMEA countries, 70% of women who responded said they were the experts among their friends and family compared to 4% of the men in those countries. In Asia Pacific, that number was 15% women and 7% men. And then in the Americas, that relationship was flipped. Only 4% of women consider themselves experts among their friends and family, while 8% of men.
So when I was in Norway, I was filming a little bit something that I don't really want to tease yet, but
ooh, you just did.
I had a really long conversation with Roya from Afghanistan. And she also joined us on the retreat afterwards. So I was fortunate enough to get to know her decently well. And, you know, she's been paying her employees in this Afghanistan company. By the way, it's called the Citadel Software Company. And she founded it in 2010. So she's way ahead of the curve on all of us in terms of memeing Citadel meme. Women in Afghanistan have a really hard time opening bank accounts. And they need a man's permission or they need family's permission. They're basically cut out of the financial system. So when the Taliban took over, so most of her education work and most of her employees were women. And they were all getting paid in Bitcoin and educated on how to use Bitcoin. So when the Taliban took over and their whole financial system went up in flames, there was a lot of very successful men that were less equipped than girls and women who knew how to use Bitcoin. So these women had the need for it before the men had the need for it. And as a result, they had years of experience using it. So it could have something to do with that. That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. No, I think that's like a fascinating, that's one of the most fascinating data points that came out of the study to me. Is that, and actually Paul Miller and I were discussing it before we came in here to record. Like why is that? Be interesting.
Shout out to Paul Miller.
I'd be really interested to dive deeper into the social reasons for that, like how women in these countries are viewed.
They're financially excluded, and they're excluded from so many different aspects of society. So, of course, freedom technology is going to appeal to them more because they lack freedom.
Yeah, no, but like more importantly, like the expert among their friends and family, the wording of this particular question. So they're the ones educating not only women, but men as well. Yeah. That was, one of the fascinating
things.
Awesome.
It's empowering.
Very empowering. And then another thing which really lit a fire under my ass, and I think should light a fire under all of our asses who are a part of this movement to educate people about Bitcoin, is chart 11, which highlighted the more people feel they know about cryptocurrency, the more optimistic they are about Bitcoin's future. And so this basically highlights, like, hey, the more knowledge you give people, the better educated people are about this, the more confident they are in Bitcoin. And I think that this is a massive low-hanging fruit that we can all rally around to get better information to people. And when I wrote about this report in the Bent this week, that's one thing I said, though. Like, obviously we talk a lot about Bitcoin Twitter, and obviously a lot of you are listening on YouTube, and there's a lot of good information on Twitter, YouTube, mailing list, forums, but I do think podcast, obviously, we do have to go reach the audience where they are too. So, I mean, we've been having discussions behind the scenes. If you've followed tftc.io on Instagram,
we're launching a Pornhub channel.
We're boycotting porn still.
Marty's fine with boycotting porn, but Instagram and TikTok are fine.
Yeah, I'm not taking my clothes off. I agree.
This is still fucking cringe, Marty. Really? This is our Instagram?
Hey, it's cringe.
I didn't know this existed because I don't have Instagram.
Yeah. Oof. So you don't have to look at it. I'll only pull it up. But we're putting clips up here. We've gotten a lot of good traction over the last week. But again, the point I'm trying to make is
so bad.
We may not like Instagram. We may not like TikTok for privacy and corrosive.
This is so bad.
Data mining reasons. But the audience, whether we like it or not, is on these
biggest
platforms.
Biggest cell phone and rabbit hole recap history is unfolding live on air.
Hey, somebody's got to do it. Do you want the shitcoiners educating?
I don't support this.
Why don't you support this? Let's talk about it.
I don't support this.
Why don't you support it?
I don't like it.
Why not?
I don't like it for the same reason you don't like Pornhub.
Okay, go into it.
Social media is corrupting our children.
Yes.
I don't even think, I think we use Twitter too much.
But do you not see any value in going to where the audience is, to where these people need to be educated?
I mean, you're just enabling the business model is what you're doing. You're enabling the Facebook, TikTok business model and all the
Somebody's drowning in a pool. You have to dive in and save them, right?
No.
No, you don't? You just let them drown?
I mean, I don't think that's a good comparison.
Why not?
Because you don't have to. You're not.
What if
rewarding the business model of a fucking evil corporation by diving into a pool that's right next to you and saving somebody?
Let's do a cost benefit analysis here. Like, is it worth it if you're better educating people about Bitcoin?
Look, I mean, you can do what you want to do, but I just don't like. Yeah, I do not like this.
Well, if you're a freak out there, uses Instagram, go follow us. Because we're going to try and get better information out there. I don't like it either. You think I like fucking doing this?
You have just like random engagement clip art that's being posted on Instagram.
Again, yeah. Trying to hack the...
Like those YouTube videos, there's a reason. TFTC could have way more. We could have way more than 10,000. But how many subs do we have on YouTube?
Getting close to 11. Right? Getting close to 11.
Right. BitBoy
subscribe.
Crypto.
Hit subscribe
BitBoy
if you
haven't. BitBoy Crypto has millions of followers. And why does he do it? Is because he has all those ridiculous, you know, engagement bait pictures. Like the incentives of YouTube are set up for the lowest common denominator to be absolutely horrible people.
Do you want people getting information from BitBoy Crypto or TFTC?
Look, that is on them. They have some fucking personal responsibility. We're not going to save everybody. But I think it's a little bit egotistical to say we're saving people, period. I just like talking about Bitcoin and I think it's an important mission.
I do
so
too.
I come back week after week. But if you bend your principles to do something, then we've already fucking failed.
I mean, I'm not bending principles. My principles have always been to better educate people about Bitcoin.
Okay, well, TikTok can go fuck itself. I will never have a TikTok account. I haven't had an Instagram account for probably almost a decade now.
Yeah. No, Justin and I have had a lot of conversations about
account,
this.
No Snapchat.
I'm going to say it wasn't an easy decision. It was like something I weighed heavily, like, ah, do I want to do this? But again, Justin and I have been talking a lot in the commons recently. Is like, it seems like Twitter has been tapped out in terms of the reach that it has. And it's undeniable. Again, I don't like the business models of Facebook or TikTok, but that's where the audience is. And I would like to get quality. I'd rather them get Bitcoin information from TFTC than BitBoy Crypto. Matt's shaking his head. What are the comments saying?
It's such a fucking slippery slope. The best comment is Ty saying, Marty needs to do the soy face for YouTube thumbnails.
I will not bend my principles there.
Do you draw the line, Marty?
I don't know.
Where do you draw the line?
At the soy face. Definitely at the soy face. That is a line I will not cross.
We'll see. What do the freaks think? 6 months over under Marty soy face YouTube?
I can't.
You know what Marty's going to do? First, Marty's going to make Carr do the soy face, and then Marty's going to do the soy face.
No, Carr. I would never make Carr do a soy face. His body, his choice. And I don't think he I don't think he wants to be bullied into a soy face. That's interesting.
We got to try everything.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to do it. Don't worry. I'll try to educate people on these platforms.
I saw my face on that fucking Instagram fucking channel and I'm fucking pissed.
It's a good clip. It's a good clip.
It's a good clip.
It's from last week's.
Damn it.
It's about you talking about the power of the Oslo Freedom Forum.
That's great. Yeah. Oh, fucking.
Sometimes you got to do things you don't like. I don't like it. You think I like holding a camera up and be like, hey.
I think you love it.
I don't. You should see. The bloopers. We should do bloopers one day. There's a lot of funny bloopers where I'm like, oh my God, this is fucking embarrassing. What do we got next here?
Oh. So fucking bad. Anyway, I was going to say before you went down this fucking horrible tangent that I asked Roya, you know, so Roya started working in Afghanistan in like 2010. And then up until Taliban took over, and I was at that point there was a point where like a lot of people needed Bitcoin that didn't know how to use it. And I said to her, do you have any regrets, like what would you have done differently? And she said education. We should have, they were constantly doing education, but they should have never took their foot off the pedal.
Yeah,
just kept doing education hard. And there's really something to be said specifically about grassroots in-person education. And I know, Carr, you have the awesome Bitcoin Club tonight. Mm-hmm. We have Nash Bitcoiners next week.
Bitcoin Plus Plus next week.
You know, these in-person events might not get the engagement numbers of TikTok or Instagram, but they're extremely effective.
High leverage.
And each of those people go and help, you know, 10, 15 other people. And then those people go and help 10, 15 other people. And you can do it all in a relatively distributed way. You know, I was hanging out with Gigi this week. And I was talking to Moritz of Spectre the other day, and the German Bitcoin community. So they have basically a German version of Rabbit Hole Recap that Gigi and a bunch of other guys started a couple years ago. And it's all German language. And there's all these small meetups that have popped up all throughout Germany and Austria. And each of those meetups are these small distributed knowledge centers, right, where everyone's sharing and spreading knowledge and educating each other, and then they're going and educating their friends and family. And to me, that is not only much more effective, but you're not enabling a lot of the evil that we see in big tech in the world today.
I agree there. You don't want to leverage big tech to attack big tech.
Carr just brought up my interview with Gigi, the picture. Gigi didn't bring his green suit, so we put a pillowcase on his head. A pillowcase and sunglasses. He couldn't see me while we were doing the interview. He was just like talking in my general direction.
Seems bad for facilitation of quality breathing there, Gigi. But
it was a great conversation.
No, I completely agree. Shout out to Roya, what she's doing in Afghanistan. The meetups. I mean, that's why we're so adamant about repeating it as many times as possible. If you don't have a local Bitcoin meetup, go start one. If you have one in your city, and you haven't gone yet, highly recommend going. I do. These in-person meetups are some of the highest leverage touch points that you can have in the Bitcoin space. It invigorates you, if anything, just invigorates you, lets you know, hey, I'm not alone in this. There are a lot of other people out there who see the world like I do, at least in terms of Bitcoin being something that we should make sure is successful in the long run. And it'll inspire you to go do other things. So go start a local Bitcoin meetup if you don't have one already. And if you do have one, haven't been yet, give it a try. I'm not asking you to dox yourself, but I think you'll be happy with the outcome after attending one of these meetups. They're popping up all over the world, freaks. I wanted to tie this in to the macro.
And you have the WEF conference coming to Austin too.
Yes. Luckily, we have Carr and Pleb Lab and Base 58, Lisa and Sean throwing Bitcoin Plus Plus to have some yin to that yang.
And they sold it out too.
Yeah, BTC they did.
Plus Plus. Cheers to that. I'm going to be missing it.
Yeah. Look at that site. It's fucking beautiful.
Carr, did you make this site?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You did a really good job, my dude.
Thank you. Said thank you if you can't hear him. I wanted to bring this up on the macro section of the podcast, but we don't have it on the list, so I forgot to mention it. But Matty Mazinkius over at Crypto Voices, he's rebranding to Porkopolis Economics, I believe. He came out with the Q1 2020 monetary base update. He's got a nice UI overhaul to the charts and that report. And Bitcoin is now the ninth largest base money in the world when you include silver and gold in that accounting. It was the seventh largest in Q4 2020. Obviously, Bitcoin was around all-time highs, or 2021, excuse me. Bitcoin was around all-time highs then. It has since fallen two spots to number nine, but the chart that Carr has up right now is the signal, despite the fact that it fell by two spots. I think Bitcoin being at number nine in terms of the size of base money in the world is extremely impressive. And if you see that chart, the far right side of it has Bitcoin's historical positioning. And in 2013, it broke onto the scene at number 53. It stayed there until 2016 when it popped up to 46. And then 2017 went to number 11, popped back down to number 22. In 2018, rode back up to 15. In 2019, hit number 9 in 2020 and is sitting at number 9 right now. And so despite the fact that it fell a couple spots from Q4 2021 to Q1 2022, it has been making a climb of that chart. And so the base money of the world does have a Pareto distribution. The top five currencies make up a lion's share of this overall monetary base in the world. So that's the Eurozone nations, United States, Japan, China, and the UK. And then Switzerland falling behind that. So like Bitcoin is approaching the top of the monetary based food chain. Another chart that Matthew included he includes every quarter in his reports is the price at which Bitcoin will begin to surpass these currencies. It was ahead of the Swiss franc when it was trading above $43,000. It will surpass that again when it trades above $43,200. Then next up on the list is the British pound, which if Bitcoin goes above $72,300, it'll surpass that. And then we get to the big boys in China, Japan, United States, and Eurozone with yuan, yen, dollar, and euro, respectively. It'll begin to surpass them when it reaches well into the six figures, above $277,900. It will take the top spot if it ever surpasses $364,300 in Kuckbucks denomination.
I just saw Matt Mazinkius in Oslo. He was on my CBDC panel. Absolutely great dude. It was a pleasure to get to kick it with him again. I mean, I hadn't seen him since we saw him in 2019 at Riga. But anyway, he does fantastic work. So he releases these reports quarterly. super dense, tons and tons and tons of information. Most people aren't paying attention to it. You know, me and Marty retweet it every time it goes out, but people don't really pay attention to it. There's just so much fucking information there. And he collects it individually. He goes to like individual central bank websites to collect the information. Like that information is all scattered around the global internet, and he pulls it all together, puts it in nice charts. So he's at Crypto Voices on Twitter. Consider at following crypto him.
Underscore voices.
And, but he's a Bitcoiner, even though it's got crypto in its name, it's a playoff of Macro Voices, which I guess is a really big macro podcast. So that was the play, but he's a Bitcoiner.
Yeah. Even though Eric Townsend really hates Bitcoin, Macro Voices is a good podcast. You're looking to get like an insight into the macro.
I like Korkopolis Economics as a rebrand.
Yes.
We've been telling him for, well, at least I've been personally telling him for at least 3 years now that he needs to take crypto out of the name. So
yes. And if you've been following along in the TFTC interview series, Matthew and I do a podcast every quarter after he drops this. We were supposed to record it on Monday of this week, but we had some last minute scheduling conflicts. And so we're going to try and get that in next week. So we'll have a more in-depth deep dive into the Q1 2022 quarterly update next week for you freaks. Always a pleasure. Matthew is one of the most underrated minds in the space, particularly from the monetary approach to Bitcoin. These, like Matt said, the amount of detail that goes into these quarterly reports is extremely impressive, and we're lucky to have somebody like Matthew Mazingshus working on this.
Cheers to that.
There's a lot of FUD around this next subject, but actually, if you read the piece and look into it, it's actually not that bad. The Biden administration is considering Bitcoin mining regulation, and they have a team that is going to be doing research throughout the summer, and I believe in August or September, they're going to come out with a report that highlights their findings. Niraj from Coin Center did a thread earlier today that basically highlighted that many people saw this like, oh, they're going to come after Bitcoin mining. But actually, if you read what they wrote in this Bloomberg tax article, they're basically going to look into the emission side of Bitcoin. And in the article as well, they actually highlighted the proof of work is worth it because it provides significant security to Bitcoin. So it seems like they're open to being okay with Bitcoin. And I think when they go and do their research, particularly around the emissions that are associated with Bitcoin mining, they'll find, particularly with the flare gas mining that's going on, that if you care about emissions, Bitcoin is good because it's helping the energy sector in the United States become extremely energy efficient, particularly oil and gas operators that are allowed to use their Bitcoin enables them to use their associated gas to mine Bitcoin, which lowers methane emissions. So a lot of people were saying, oh, this is FUD. This is not good, but if you actually read what they write, it doesn't seem as
bad.
That's
interesting coming from you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I don't want any government intervention in all of this, but when you compare it to something like that's going on in New York State right now, where it seems like they're really pushing the mining ban, people are trying to equate it to that. But I think I'm open to being pleasantly surprised with this report. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I mean, I guess it's my role to do the exact opposite of you. I mean, this is going to be a straight up ESG attack on Bitcoin, and they're all demons.
Okay, yeah, I could see that as well. This was one of those like people read the head, like this is one of
you like that. I channeled my inner Marty.
Yes, they are demons. I mean, ESG. That's actually another. It's ESG's dying. I said we would kill ESG. I think we're us and others who have joined the cause and were fighting the cause before we joined are having some success in destroying ESG. I was perusing Zero Hedge earlier today. Yes, I was reading Zero Hedge. They do have good data in there. You just got to find it.
Do you mostly read them on Insta, or how does that work?
I don't know if they're on Insta. Yeah, here it is. I'll put this in the in the group chat, Car. But yeah, so ESG funds posted their largest monthly outflow on record as the greenwashing racket starts to unravel. Yeah, so you've had Deutsche Bank in the last week. I forget who came after them, but they've been fined for lying about their greenwashing and their ESG funds. They're not actually doing anything to help the environment, social justice, or governance at corporate board levels. They're just using the ESG meme to acquire a bunch of money. And it seems like there's been a material shift in sentiment toward these ESG equity funds, as that chart highlights that Carr just had up. He had our largest monthly outflow ever. The last monthly outflow was in the beginning of 2019, and we had a significant monthly outflow in April of this year of like $300 million or something like that, close to that. So it seems that people are waking up to the fact that this is a scam, and they're trying to disassociate themselves with ESG at the equity fund level. Who knows? Maybe this is just people selling equities to get into cash. But let's keep this momentum going. We're destroying ESG's reputation. Let's destroy the grifters in the asset management space that are trying to use the meme just to eke fees from you. That's really all is it about. All it's about, the people at the top of the chain are trying to force industries to work in certain ways, and then the fund managers below them are using that meme to provide you with funds that provide them fees. It's really a middleman grift there. So this is what we like to see here at TFTC, ESG going down. Last thing on the list. That's it. That's all we got. And it's almost 4.
Reminder, freaks, if you're in the Austin area, Austin Bitcoin Club is tonight. Come down to the Bitcoin Commons. Great crew, including Michael Atwood, are going to be there. Parker Lewis. Should be a fun time. Obviously, Carl will be there as well. We moved podcast feeds. We have a new dedicated podcast feed for Rabbit Hole Recap. So if you haven't yet, search Rabbit Hole Recap in your favorite podcast app. Click subscribe. If you would consider it, leave a review. It does help us get this new feed off the ground, even if it's just like the stars rather than writing out the words of your review. It would be appreciated. I love you all as always. Stay humble and stack sats.
Well, we're not going to end it there since we don't have any shout outs this week.
But I got to get my stay humble and stack sats in there just in case Carr just kind of screamed. So you feel free to continue.
Over the last week, we have had 53 supporters on Podcasting 2.0. Thank you for your supporters. And we've had a bunch of boostergrams. And so since we don't have shout outs, these boostergrams did not come in at $50, but we'll read them anyway. At Humble Sats said, stay humble, stack sats.
Read the amounts. Are you going from the top to the bottom?
Bottom to top. So, or just, and this is time. Or
this how is many at, sats as did he give came, for that?
220 sats. 440 sats from at Wright Hansen. Loved having Jack on the pod. Maybe you should have more guests on RHR. I wonder what Matt was going to say at the end. Keep up the great work.
You'll never know. Blame Carr. Hashtag blame Carr.
220 sats from at LP Capital Chai. First time using Fountain. So dope. Love Fountain app. Disclaimer. I'm a personal investor. 543 sats from at Pitar. Bitcoin and freedom go together like a horse and carriage. I like that. At 220 sats from at Humble Sats. Stay humble, stack sats. 220 sats from at Rias. R-H-I-A-S-D-A-D. Rhea's dad. What a team. Thanks, guys. I finally joined Fountain and streamed some sats. Great rip from Norway. Peace from Scotland. Shout out to our Scottish freaks. 2,178 sats from at Auburn _ Citadel. Hell yeah. 209 sats from Cyan Snake via Breeze. New feed! Exclamation points. 836 sats from Nomad Joe. From the CurioCaster app at Good Rip. 264 sats from at Bon. Podcast ads boost rate. And then he sent 330 sats. Congrats on 200, boys. I started listening years ago and went through the back catalog to say I've listened to them all. Amazing show, guys. Looking forward to the next 200. Appreciate you guys so much. Carr, fix your node. Your splits fail every time. And then he sent another one. You guys are all doing amazing work to make this a better world. Much love. So shout out to you freaks contributing via podcasting 2.0. As you saw there, you can use the Fountain app to boost and send a message with your
cool
sats.
The cool part of it, Marty,
came from Breeze and Curious.
The lead. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
The cool part is any podcasting 2.0 app, people can leave boostograms and you can read them on Fountain because it's an open standard.
Yeah.
That's the cool part.
Yeah, you can send them from any app and they can congregate because they're just using the messaging system in L&D.
Yep.
So thank you, freaks, for supporting us via podcasting 2.0. Like Matt said, we have our own dedicated rabbit hole recap feed now. If you haven't subscribed yet, do that. If you're listening on YouTube, throw a subscribe on the YouTube channel, set notifications. I'm getting texts from my wife, where the hell are you? So I'm going to go home. Love you guys.
Delete your Instagram, freaks.
Or follow if you don't do it. Peace and love.
Okay.